Hello, and welcome to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger and the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, November 9th. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. Now let's get started with some local news for Fort Dodge. Our first headline today reads, Hops for Heroes, Shiny Top to Host Fundraiser for SOS. An event aimed to benefit a local organization that supports law enforcement and first responder agencies will be held this weekend. Shiny Top Brewing, located at 520 Central Avenue, is hosting Hops for Heroes from 2 to 8 p.m. Saturday. The fundraiser has a $10 cover fee with free entry for all first responders. All proceeds from the event will be donated to Serving Our Servants, or SOS, and the family of fallen Algona police officer Kevin Cram, who was killed on duty in September. When Officer Cram passed, a lot of people started doing fundraising for the family, said Taylor Kennedy, who handles marketing for Shiny Top. A lot of us at Shiny Top are related to cops or firemen, and a lot of them are regular customers as well. So we thought we should do something, and we thought, let's do a fundraiser. The choice to support SOS was an easy one, she said. SOS was founded in 2014 by the late Reverend Al Henderson of St. Paul Lutheran Church as a way to support local first responders. The group helps in a myriad of ways, from buying unbudgeted equipment for an agency to putting together comfort bags for officers to carry in their cars when they go on calls that involve children, to simply bringing some pizza and cookies by a department in hopes of brightening their day. That's what the group did on Wednesday when they brought stacks of Shiny Top pizza to the Iowa State Patrol Post No. 7's quarterly meeting. SOS has never done an actual fundraising event, SOS President T.J. Pingle said. In the past, the group has raised money through T-shirt sales. But this is the first time someone's reached out and said, hey, we are supporting your group. We support what you're doing, and we'd like to help raise some funds, he said. Pingle said he was blown away by Shiny Top's offer. For somebody to do this, it's really nice, he said. The event is also an opportunity for the community to learn more about SOS, Pingle said. It's been 10 years since the group started, and everybody's heard of it. Everybody knows about Pastor Al, but I don't know if everybody fully realizes we're still going and going stronger than ever before, he said. The event will start at 2 p.m. with a silent auction and a 50-50 raffle tickets available for purchase. Mikey Dean, a musical act from Omaha, will perform from 4 to 6 p.m., and the Section 7 band will take the stage at 7 p.m. to play 80s rock until 9 p.m. The auction and raffle winners will be announced at 8 p.m. Shiny Top will have blue beer and plenty of food available for purchase. Guests are encouraged to drink responsibly and have plans for a designated driver. Our next local headline reads, Large Crowds Attend Open Forum on Stumpy's Closing. The dateline is Duncombe. With a packed room at the Duncombe Community Center on Wednesday night, a few things were obvious. A lot of people don't like Bruce, or Stumpy as he is known, Wagner, and a lot of those people don't want to see Stumpy's Bar and Grill close in Duncombe. In early October, word began to spread that Post 491 was evicting Wagner's popular bar from its home in the building owned by the American Legion Post 491. On Wednesday, Roger Snell, adjutant of Post 491, hosted an open forum on the issue. Snell told the crowd that the meeting's purpose was to share information. Snell previously told the Messenger that the Legion voted to not renew Wagner's lease because they don't like him, and he's not a nice person to deal with, adding that it's not just business, it's personal. We want to hear what you think. We want you to hear what the facts are, Snell said. The facts, it turned out, was that Wagner's lease on the American Legion building was set to expire on August 31st after 10 years of tenancy. Snell said Wagner was invited to the Legion's August meeting on the third Wednesday of the month to discuss the lease, but a couple of days before the meeting, Wagner informed the Legion he wasn't going to be able to make it. The group's regular meeting went on as planned, Snell said, and no action on the bar lease was taken. He said he was told a few days later that Wagner had been at the Iowa State Fair, and that's why he couldn't attend the meeting. Kim Chambers, a partner in the Stumpy's bar business, said the Legion offered to renew the bar's lease with her, on the condition that Wagner wasn't present in the building during business hours. Snell confirmed this a few minutes later. The meeting ran haphazard with no real order. There were shouts at times and aggressive gesturing. As a fellow veteran, I'm kind of ashamed of the Legion right now, said Alice Neal, a Duncombe resident and veteran of the U.S. Navy. Representatives from charities like the Sleeping Angels Foundation, Angel Ride to Save the Tatas, and the Angel Tree spoke on behalf of Wagner, saying that their fundraising events wouldn't be as successful without the support they receive from Stumpy's Bar. Quite frankly, this guy is hard to get along with, was a comment echoed throughout the evening, mostly by people who were speaking in support of Wagner and the bar. A lot of people don't like Stumpy, but the town needs this, said Greg Royster. The town needs a bar, a restaurant, a place to be. It always has and always will. You're probably in the minority if you like him, said Brian Wagner, a cousin of Bruce. I think you guys are lucky to have him. I think that Stump and Kim run a good bar. I think you guys are totally overly optimistic on ever opening that bar again. I think you guys have a building to rent, and I don't know why Stump even wants to be here anymore. But he still wants to be here, and you guys are lucky to have him, he said. Snell claims three different people have inquired about leasing the bar, but did not elaborate. Judy Stuerwald, president of the Legion's Women's Auxiliary, noted the harm that a business closing could have on a small town and asked, isn't the Legion supposed to be a member of the community? Stuerwald's late husband, Gary, had previously been the Legion's commander and had to work with Wagner since his lease with the Legion began a decade ago. Stuerwald said even her husband found it difficult to work with Wagner, but they figured it out and made it work, she said. Stuerwald asked if the Legion would consider having another meeting with all of the members and voting on the issue again. The rent's going up big time if we did it, said Roger Dillingham, Legion member and former commander. Dillingham then accused Stuerwald of trying to take over the Legion. We'll disband the Legion and go join Fort Dodge or Webster City, he said. The meeting ended with little accomplished, but Snell told those in attendance that the Legion would meet and vote on the issue again. He previously said the group has 17 members, and only 8 were in attendance at the meeting where they voted to oust Stumpy's. Snell said he was told by the state adjutant that a quorum was not needed. Stumpy's bar is still open. Our next local news headline for Fort Dodge reads, Fort Dodge to honor Veterans Friday. The Fort Dodge Veterans Day observance will be on Friday at St. Edmund Catholic School, located at 2321 6th Avenue North. The doors will open at 10:30 a.m., with music starting at 10:45 a.m., and the ceremony beginning at 10:59 a.m. The keynote speaker will be Mark Thompson, a retired Marine Corps colonel from Clarion. St. Edmund students will perform patriotic music, The observance will conclude with a flag ceremony and rifle salute. Following the ceremony, veterans of Foreign Wars Post 1856 will serve bean soup and cornbread at the post building at 5th Avenue South and 29th Street. And just some reminders, if you want to go to the Fort Dodge Veterans Day observance, it will be 10:30 a.m. Friday at St. Edmund Catholic School. Our next headline reads, Sac County Man Sentenced to 40 Years for Child Molestation. The dateline is Sac City. A Litton man will spend the next four decades behind bars after pleading guilty to four counts of lascivious acts with a minor, a Class C felony. According to a release from Sac County Attorney Ben Smith, 38-year-old Antonio Farms admitted to committing sexual offenses against a victim under the age of 14. Farms was initially charged with four counts of second-degree sexual abuse, a Class B felony. Farms accepted a plea agreement last month to plead guilty to the four counts of lascivious acts, and the four counts of sexual abuse were dismissed. On Monday, District Court Judge Derek Johnson sentenced Farms to four consecutive 10-year prison sentences. Farms was also placed on the Iowa Sex Offender Registry for the remainder of his life. The offenses occurred in the spring of 2023 and were investigated by the Sac County Sheriff's Office. Farms was arrested and charged in July. And now turning to today's news briefs, this headline reads, No Paper on Saturday. The Messenger will not be published on Saturday in observance of the Veterans Day holiday. The opinion page, life section, color comics, and other features usually found in the weekend paper will be in Friday's paper. Throughout the weekend, check messengernews.net for breaking news. And our next news brief has a headline that reads, Coats for Kids donation deadline is Friday. The Community Health Center of Fort Dodge and Shimcat Motor Company are seeking the community's help in fulfilling the need for warm winter gear for local children. Donations of new or gently used clean coats, gloves, hats, snow pants, and boots are being accepted now at Shimcat Motor Company, located at 3126 5th Avenue South. Items can also be donated at Mineral City Mill and Grill, located at 2621 5th Avenue South, Papa Murphy's Pizza, located at 2813 5th Avenue South, or Starbucks, located at 2940 5th Avenue South. All sizes are needed, from babies and toddlers to high schoolers. The collection will continue through Friday. The public distribution will take place from 9 a.m. to noon November 18th via a drive-thru at the health center. Anyone in need of a child's coat can drive through. Staff will greet them at their vehicle to see what size is needed. They will then deliver the coat directly to the vehicle. And now turning to today's obituaries for Fort Dodge, we first remember Marguerite Wagner. Services for Marguerite will be 11 a.m. Wednesday, November 15th at Holmes Lutheran Church. Visitation is 9:30 to 11 a.m. Wednesday, today, November 15th at the church. That would have been yesterday. I'm sorry. Today is Thursday. Ewing Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Next, we remember Pamela Butterly. Pamela A. Butterly, age 78, went to be with the Lord on Tuesday, November 7th at Fort Dodge Health and Rehab. A prayer service will be held at 11 a.m. Monday, November 13th at the Chapel Mausoleum in North Lawn Cemetery. Next, we remember William Dibble. William, or Bill as he was known, S. Dibble, age 71, passed away on Friday, November 3rd. At Paula J. Baber Hospice House. Services are currently pending with historic Bruce Funeral Home of Fort Dodge. Next, we remember LaDonna Boughton. LaDonna Boughton, age 53 of Fort Dodge, passed away Saturday, November 4th. Arrangements are with historic Bruce Funeral Home of Fort Dodge. Next, we remember Eric Gambill. Eric Gambill, age 66, of Lehigh, passed away Wednesday, November 8th at his home in Lehigh. Arrangements are with historic Bruce Funeral Home of Fort Dodge. Next, we remember William Ball. William Ball died November 7th. Visitation will be from 10 to 10:45 a.m. with a funeral at 11 a.m. on Saturday, November the 11th at St. Thomas Aquinas Catholic Church. Bowman Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. And now turning to local sports headlines, this one reads, Dodgers take bronze with quintet of underclassmen. The dateline is Des Moines. Mason Gatto already has the Fort Dodge cheer program on the right track when it comes to sportsmanship and effort. The second-year head coach's next goal is to bring the Dodgers back to the Class 4A trophy table on a regular basis. The team took a significant step forward last Saturday at the Iowa Cheerleading Coaches Association Championships as Fort Dodge Senior High secured a third-place performance in the stunt group division. Junior Danica Hansen, junior Gabby Castro, sophomore Lily Nekvinda, and sophomore Ada Ryder and freshman Olivia Roakes gave the Dodgers their first top three finish at state in this specific competition since 2021. From year one in 2022 and 2023, our coaching staff has worked to build technique from the ground up when it comes to stunting, said Gatto, a former All-State cheerleader with the Dodgers and 2017 Fort Dodge Senior High graduate. Taking this stunt group to compete at state and seeing the high level of scores on technique has proved to me that the path we are on is the right one when it comes to building the strength of our program. Securing bronze was a proud, memorable moment in and of itself. And it was even more special, given it came in the division I competed in and won in high school with my teammates in 2016, alongside Alana Schiltz, Sydney Wagner, Maggie Castor, and Shaylin Hansen. The 2023 Dodger Quintet extended the proud tradition of stunt group at the school. Most recently, Fort Dodge placed first in stunt at both the 2016 and 17 ICCA championships, and third in 2021. Earning third place in the state out of 13 Class 4A schools was such an accomplishment for this stunt group, said Gatto, a former cheer captain at the University of Northern Iowa. Proud is an understatement. In the past, Fort Dodge has presented a competitive team that performs well under pressure. I am beyond proud of these five athletes for instilling determination, strength, and the use of technique back to our competitive program. In Gatto's first season at the helm last year, the Dodgers were named the 2022-2023 ICCA State of Iowa Sportsman Award winner. We plan to stay strong in our program beliefs by not only teaching our athletes the skills to be successful cheerleaders, but also teaching them the skills to be successful leaders in our school and our community, said Gatto, who is assisted by Avery Ramirez and Tyler Claybaugh. We look forward to continuing to be a competitive cheerleading team that rallies the top teams in the state. Gatto has a young group overall that continues to learn the ropes as they develop in their performances. One of the most valuable things we have learned together, both team and coach, is taking risks and understanding the value of growth, Gatto said. We knew that the 4A stunt group division was a hard one, and none of our athletes had competed in this division before, so that was a risk in itself. These girls were hungry for growth this year, though. They pushed through each stunt progression, taking stunt difficulty to a new level for our squad. It has been very important for us to stop and recognize the growth and resilience that our athletes have experienced and, at the same time, instill a mindset that we can take the risks to see the improvement. And I think we have time for one more local sports headline. For Fort Dodge, this one reads, Iowa Central pins Trojans. The Iowa Central men's wrestling team didn't disappoint in their home opener on Wednesday. The 11th-ranked Tritons easily defeated 17th-ranked Nyack, who are 0-1, 41-7 inside Hodges Fieldhouse. The Tritons picked up 8 victories on the night, including 6 by bonus points. The guys that wrestled went hard, said ICC head coach Luke Moffitt. When you have 3 home duels, you want to have 10 matches, so having 3 forfeits wasn't good for the younger guys who are trying to get matches. The guys that did compete are looking for ways to improve and keep pushing, he said. Top-ranked at 149 pounds, defending NJCAA national champion Matt Sarbo earned a 17-2 first-period technical fall over Emmanuel Celestin for Iowa Central. Michael Myers at 165 pounds made easy work of Roush Jaeger, earning a fall. Jamie Bruner at 133 pounds also got a fall for the Tritons, pinning McKinley Charles. Sarbo didn't disappoint, Moffitt said. Michael did the same thing and controlled the match. Jamie got the job done quickly. We always talk about bonus points and how that will make a difference in March. Iowa Central also received tight victories from Josiah Schartzeli at 157 pounds and Tristan Irvin at 184 pounds. Schartzeli and Nyack's Corey Scanlon fought to a 1-1 tie through 3 periods, but Schartzeli earned riding time for the 1-point victory. Tristan Irvin gutted out an 8-7 win after rallying from a 5-0 deficit. Trenton Walker at 125 pounds, 7th-rated Lawrence Rosario at 174 pounds, and Joe Lewis, a heavyweight, all won forfeits for Iowa Central. Winning those tight matches early is big for those 2 freshmen, Moffitt said. They gutted those wins out and were both impressive. The Tritons are back in action when they head to Des Moines for the Grandview Open on Saturday. The next duel for Iowa Central is on Wednesday against Iowa Lakes in Estherville. Action will begin at 7 p.m. And you are listening to the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger and the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, November 9th on IRIS, Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind. Now let's turn to some Mason City news. And our first Mason City headline today reads, New Event Center Coming to Legacy Golf Course at the 19. A new event center will soon be opening just off the 18th green at Legacy Golf Course at the 19 in Mason City. The 18-hole course was bought by the Pritchard family last year, and 2023 has been the first year of operations as Legacy Golf Course at the 19. At what was formerly the Mason City Country Club, located at 3331 19th Street Southwest. It should be completed by January 1st. It will be an event center that can host over 200 people, club manager Isaac Friends said. We hope to have corporate outings here, weddings here, and small group outings, really anything, he said. In addition to the event center, renovations on the building directly north of the event center are being finished to include club storage space, a pro shop, and an eatery. Directly east of the event center will be a professional kitchen capable of handling large groups. The event center will be open for events year-round, but Friends said he expects it to be fully staffed seasonally to coincide with the golf schedule. Sunday will be the last day the course is open to play in 2023. Friends said he thinks the space will be popular. The course is semi-private. It is open to the public on Mondays, Fridays, and holiday weekends. The course itself was designed in 1915 by Tom Bendelow, a Scotsman commissioned by A.G. Spalding to design golf courses all over the U.S. The view doesn't get much better than this, he said. It's in town, close to hotels, and close to restaurants. The event center is just the start of the investments being made into the property. There has already been a $3.1 million spent on the property and equipment. A VIP tent clubhouse, drainage and maintenance improvements, and more. Future investments, including a clubhouse, swimming pool, irrigation system, course improvements, a maintenance shed, pickleball and basketball courts, along with a dog park, are expected to total $14.2 million. An exact timeline on the future projects has not been determined. People looking for information on membership, event center space, or general inquiries can be directed to isaac.friends@pritchards.com. More information is available at legacy@19.com. Our next local news story has a headline that reads, Northwood Kinsett coach placed on leave pending investigation. A Northwood Kinsett girls wrestling coach has been placed on leave while an investigation is conducted against him after a complaint was filed with the district. According to a press release circulated to parents from District Superintendent Michael Crozier, Coach Terry L. Lowe of Northwood was, quote, placed on leave in accordance with district policy and standard protocol while this matter is promptly investigated. Lowe coaches the girls' wrestling program at NK, as well as North Central Cooperative Girls' Wrestling Club, the North Iowa Trailblazers. Multiple attempts to reach Lowe for comment were unsuccessful, and the Worth County Sheriff's Office has not yet commented on the status of the investigation. Lowe was also employed at St. Ansgar Community School District, where Crozier also serves as superintendent, as Director of Nutritional Services until his recent resignation, according to Crozier. Lowe's information, however, is still listed in the staff directory on St. Ansgar's CSD's website. The release continued, "Student safety is our highest priority, and we thoroughly investigate any report that raises a concern about the conduct of a staff member. This case is no exception." And this story will be updated as more information becomes available. Our next headline reads, Deferred Judgment for Mitchell County Man. A McIntyre man, originally facing up to 10 years in prison after allegedly firing a gun after a bar fight, was given a deferred judgment Tuesday. According to court records, 33-year-old Brandon Joe Maloon was charged with intimidation with a dangerous weapon, a Class C felony, on December 15th. Maloon later pleaded guilty to assault with a dangerous weapon, an aggravated misdemeanor punishable by up to 2 years in jail. Mitchell County deputies were dispatched to Goosey's Bar in McIntyre around 2:20 a.m. December 10th, after dispatch received a report of an assault that had occurred outside the bar around 1:30 a.m. Court papers state that after an investigation, it was determined a fight had broken out involving Maloon and multiple other people. Maloon allegedly ran across the street to his residence and discharged the firearm while standing outside his front door. And now, turning to Mason City area obituaries, first we remember Marion DeWitt. Marion V. DeWitt, age 83, of Garner, died Monday, November 6th. Funeral services will be held at 10:30 a.m. Friday, November 10th at Zion Evangelical and Reformed Church in Garner. Burial will be at the Concord Township Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Thursday, November 9th, today, at Zion Evangelical and Reformed Church in Garner. Cataldo Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Next, we remember Thomas Godden. Thomas E. Godden, age 73, of Mason City, passed away Tuesday, November 7th. Memorial services will be at 11 a.m. Monday, November 13th at Hogan Bremer Moore Colonial Chapel, located at 126 3rd Street Northeast in Mason City. He will be buried at Clear Lake Cemetery. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior. And now turning to Dear Abby. Abby has two letters she responds to today. The first one has a headline that reads, Wife's Online Chats with Man Irk Hovering Husband. They write, Dear Abby, I discovered last year that my wife is exchanging flirty texts with a local man and had been doing so for years. I found out when I uncovered an image of an adult toy in her phone's deleted images. At the time, I nearly divorced her, but although our marriage went through a tumultuous period, we are still together. She told me then she'd stopped communicating with this man, but a few months ago, she reached out to him for help with a social media account issue she had, and now they chat daily on social media. Although it seems platonic now, it bothers me and has been a source of contention in our marriage. She says she has problems finding female friends and that he understands her medical issues and he's her friend and they are back to messaging regularly. I can see what's being said, but it still gets me upset. Am I an ogre for asking her to stop? She says that she has changed her mind and will continue to contact him. I feel like our marriage may be on rocky ground again, but she thinks I'm being awful for saying anything. What are your thoughts? And it's signed Upset Hubby in Alabama. And Abby responds, Dear Upset Hubby, I'm sorry you feel so insecure, which must be painful. You didn't mention in what context your wife had a deleted image of a sex toy. Many people shop for them online and couples enjoy them together. During the COVID-19 pandemic, sales of adult toys went through the roof. You say that you read all the communications between your wife and her male platonic friend. Why isn't that enough? Women are allowed to have male friends, and these days many of them do. If your marriage is in trouble, perhaps the cause is your ongoing effort to control her. It might improve if you back off. And Abby's second letter today has a headline that reads, Grandma Can't Keep Her Trap Shut. And they write, Dear Abby, my son, who is 5, has a rare spinal cord injury from birth. He can crawl, but he does not walk well. We have spent many months and a lot of money ensuring he is getting the best physical therapy and medical care possible for his condition, and we adhere closely to the medical advice of these experts. My mother, who lives 2,000 miles away, loves my son and wants to spend time with him. However, whenever we visit, she obsesses over the fact that my son can't walk well. I have reminded her not to fixate on his disability and to just enjoy time with him, which is what my son wants. But during his last visit, she told him, big boys walk, they don't crawl, and try harder to walk. My son has tearfully asked me twice if he can still be a big boy and crawl. He also uses a wheelchair. I'm fed up with my mother and would prefer to keep her away from my son, but I don't want to create a dramatic familial rift. Advice? And it's signed Good Mom in Montana. And Abby responds, Dear Mom, it is your duty as a mother to protect your son from harm. Tell your helpful mother, and helpful is in quotes, that if she says anything again to shame him, it will be the last time she sees him. The person who creates the familial rift won't be you. It will be your incredibly ignorant and insensitive mother. And now turning to some local sports headlines. This one reads, Zeta Johnson's versatility and leadership made her one of the state's best. And the dateline is Clear Lake. In middle school, Zeta Johnson was all in on basketball and wanted little to do with volleyball. It was to the point she didn't even want to play for the middle school team. Once Johnson got into high school, though, she fell in love with volleyball and was a rising star on the court at Clear Lake. The Lion outside hitter racked up 478 kills this season, the most in Class 3A and 6th in the state, to be named the Globe Gazette's All-Area Volleyball Player of the Year. and on Wednesday, she officially signed with Division II Minnesota Duluth to play volleyball. She finished her high school career with 1,165 kills. I realize that it's such a team sport, and I love that aspect of it, that I can't do it alone, and that I have to rely on my teammates and my teammates to rely on me, Johnson said. Volleyball translates a lot into real life, and I think that is why I love the sport so much. On the court, Johnson was the best player on the floor in most of her matches this season for a young Lions team. She was one of four seniors on the team, but the only one with significant playing time. Aside from her kill numbers, Johnson led the team in attack attempts at 1,290, a hitting average of .263, and digs at 311. In Clear Lake's final match of the season, a five-set regional loss to Osage, Johnson finished with 33 kills on 112 swings and 36 digs, a single-match school record. Her do-it-all approach, especially on a lot of out-of-system plays, made her one of the most valuable players in the state. "I sometimes take Zeta for granted," Coach Heather Johnson said. "Sometimes I think it's not a big deal because I have seen her play so much. But going through the stats, I was like, wow, she had a lot on her shoulders. But it also didn't feel that way because we had a great team overall." Aside from her play on the court, Zeta Johnson was a captain and was also named the team's Heart and Soul Award winner. That was perhaps her best contribution to a very young Clear Lake team this season that had six new starters. "I really enjoyed my role this season because I was able to lead and impact the culture of the team," Zeta Johnson said. "I have been in the game for so long, and I was able to give back to my young teammates on the court. I think this team knew how to have fun and made me want to play better." Even as her mom, Heather Johnson is surprised sometimes by how well Zeta is on and off the floor. She does know that Zeta is a team-oriented player and leader and loved to see the impact that she made on the program. "She's not a gatekeeper, which I feel like some people can be, but she wants to share that knowledge and everybody around her to be better because she wants to be better because she wants to make an impact," Heather Johnson said. "She has always done the extra things, sleep, meals, lifting on her own time. I think that will help her later in life." After visiting Minnesota Duluth, Zeta Johnson thought it was the perfect fit for her. The Bulldogs play in one of the toughest volleyball conferences in the country, the Northern Sun, and are nationally ranked every year. She visited five other schools and committed in the spring. She made the move official on Wednesday. "I know that I will still have to make an impact, but I could eventually become an impact player, and that is what I want for my college career," Zeta said. "I want to be able to make an impact on the team. The campus there and the city are beautiful. I love pretty much every part of it." Zeta Johnson completed that at Clear Lake. Zeta Johnson completed that at Clear Lake on the volleyball court. The results may have not shown on the court, but Heather Johnson thinks that her daughter was a program-changing player. "It's not just Zeta, but if you have one player who is really good and does the work, I think there is a trickle-down effect that will help your program," Heather Johnson said. And being as there's no new state news, let's turn to some national headlines. The first one, GOP candidates hit Trump and back Israel. Here are highlights from the Republican debate. Republican presidential candidates used the third debate of the GOP primary campaign to show their support for Israel and display at least some willingness to criticize Donald Trump, the frontrunner in the race. But they face an increasingly urgent task to emerge as a clear alternative to the former president, who skipped the event. With the January 15th Iowa caucuses quickly approaching, it seems unlikely that Wednesday's debate will dramatically reshape the trajectory of the presidential nomination fight. There were five candidates on the debate stage, although a vendetta between two of them stood out: former UN Ambassador Nikki Haley and biotech entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy. Our next headline reads, Israeli strikes pound Gaza City as ground forces battle Hamas near major hospital. Israeli strikes pounded Gaza City overnight as ground forces battled Hamas militants in dense urban neighborhoods near a hospital where tens of thousands of Palestinians are sheltering. Gaza's largest city is the focus of Israel's campaign to crush Hamas following its deadly October 7th incursion. The Israeli military says Hamas's main command center is located in and under the Shifa hospital complex. The militant group and hospital staff deny that. The hospital's director says troops are around 3 kilometers away. Mediators were closing in Thursday on a possible deal for a 3-day ceasefire in exchange for the release of around a dozen hostages held by Hamas. That's according to officials who spoke on condition of anonymity because they have feared affecting the delicate negotiations. Our next headline reads, nearly half of Democrats disapprove of Biden's response to the Israel-Hamas war. An AP NORC poll shows nearly half of Democrats disapprove of how President Joe Biden is handling the Israeli-Hamas conflict. That's according to a new Associated Press NORC Center for Public Affairs research poll. Taken over 5 days in November, the poll shows a deep divide in the Democratic Party over the war. The poll found 50% of Democrats approve of how Biden has navigated the conflict, while 46% disapprove. The two groups diverge substantially in their views of U.S. support for Israel. The war could complicate Biden's re-election effort. He faces having to balance factions of his party with very different views on the conflict and who is ultimately responsible. Our next headline reads, a judge is set to hear arguments as Michigan activists try to keep Trump off the ballot. A judge in Michigan is expected to hear arguments Thursday on whether Secretary of State Jocelyn Benson has the authority to keep Donald Trump's name off state ballots for president. Activists are suing to force Benson to keep the former president's name off ballots. His attorneys are demanding that Trump be allowed on the 2024 Republican primary ballot. Liberal groups have filed similar lawsuits in other states, portraying Trump as the insider of the January 6, 2021 U.S. Capitol attack. Activists point to a part of the U.S. Constitution that prohibits a person from running for federal office if they have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the U.S. or given aid or comfort to those who have. Our next headline reads, House Republicans subpoena Hunter and James Biden as their impeachment inquiry ramps back up. Hunter Biden's attorney says subpoenas issued by House Republicans to members of President Joe Biden's family are a political stunt. Wednesday's subpoenas are the most aggressive step yet by Republicans in an impeachment inquiry bitterly opposed by Democrats. The move by House Oversight Committee Chair James Comer to subpoena the Democratic president's son Hunter and brother James comes as Republicans look to gain ground in their nearly year-long investigation. The Republicans have thus far failed to uncover evidence directly implicating the president in any wrongdoing, The White House and the family's lawyers say the investigation has been a political ploy, but Hunter's attorney indicated that he could be inclined to appear at the right time. Our next headline reads, "Last 12 months on Earth were the hottest ever recorded, analysis finds." The 12 months ending in October were the hottest ever recorded on Earth, and likely the planet's hottest 12-month period ever recorded, according to a report from the nonprofit science research group Climate Central. The report said burning gasoline, coal, and natural gas, along with other human activities, are to blame for the unnatural warming. Our next headline reads, "Hollywood strikes are both now over, as actors reach deal with studios, return to work with writers." Hollywood's Actors Union has reached a deal with studios to end its strike. The contract agreement reached Wednesday must still be approved by the union's board and its members, but the leadership said actors will be allowed to return to work starting Thursday. They can rejoin writers, whose own long strike ended late September. For the first time since spring, all parts of Hollywood production will be back in action. The actor's chief negotiator, Duncan Crabtree Ireland, tells the Associated Press that they reached a deal that was worth the cost on issues including pay and the use of artificial intelligence in production. And one final national headline here reads, "The man charged in last year's attack against Nancy Pelosi's husband goes to trial in San Francisco." The man accused of breaking into former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's San Francisco home, bludgeoning her husband with a hammer, and seeking to kidnap her goes to trial Thursday. David DePapp has pleaded not guilty to attempted kidnapping of a federal official and assault of the immediate family member of a federal official. The attack on then 82-year-old Paul Pelosi occurred in the early hours of October 28, 2022. It sent shockwaves through the political world just days before last year's midterm elections. It also highlighted how misinformation and conspiracy theories that spread online can fuel political violence. And that concludes today's reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger and the Mason City Globe Gazette for Thursday, November 9th. I'm your reader, Mark John Conley. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.
This is Tom Hatton with an Irish short take from the book A Culinary History of Iowa. And the first article we're going to read from the book is entitled Exploring Iowa. Located in the heart of America, Iowa is the land between two rivers, a region of the Midwest distinguished by a surprisingly rich, diverse cultural and culinary history. Between the forests of the eastern United States and the grasslands of the Great Plains to the west, Iowa's gently rolling landscape extends westward from the Mississippi River, which forms the state's entire eastern border. The Missouri River forms the western border, making Iowa the only U.S. state with two parallel rivers defining its borders. Rivers were the early highways, bringing explorers, trappers, traders, and settlers to the Iowa prairie. Centuries before the Europeans arrived, however, various Native American tribes, including the Sac, Fox, Sioux, Iowa, Meskwaki, and others, lived, hunted, and farmed across the region. The meaning of the name Iowa depends on who you ask. Traditionally, it has been described as an Iowa word meaning the beautiful land, although others say that Iowa itself is the French spelling of Iuawa, a name meaning sleepy ones, a name given in jest to the Iowa tribe by the Dakota Sioux. Living off the land defined the food and farming traditions of the tribes like the Iowa, whose history is carefully recreated at Living History Farms in Urbandale. Iowa farmers raised corn, beans, melons, and squash. Women did the farming in the Iowa culture, while men were responsible for hunting and making tools. Iowa families were subsistence farmers, raising just enough for their family to survive throughout the year and having a little put away in case of a bad year. The Iowa had separate summer, winter, and traveling lodges. Bark houses called nachachi kept the Iowa cool during hot summer months, while winter mat houses called chakiruta, made from layers of sewn cattail leaves, protected the Iowa from harsh winters and stayed around 50 degrees inside. While traveling on hunting expeditions, the Iowa lived in a chibothraji, or teepee, made from buffalo hides. Their villages also contained sweat lodges, food drying racks, cooking areas, work areas, hide scraping rocks, pottery pits, and gardens. At Living History Farms, historical interpreters at the 1700 Iowa farm discuss hunting, hide processing, fur trading, tool making, gardening, food processing, and the roles that Iowa men and women played in each. Interpreters used both recreated bone and stone tools and reproduced trade items to perform daily tasks. By the era of the 1700 Iowa farm depicted at Living History Farms, the first Europeans had seen the land that would become Iowa. Had history taken a different course centuries ago, Iowans might be known for their unique brand of French cuisine with a distinctly Midwestern flair. In the late 1600s, European explorers began paddling up and down the Mississippi River, passing along Iowa's eastern border. The first to visit Iowa were Frenchmen. Louis Joliet led a crew accompanied by Father Marquette, a Catholic priest. In 1673, the expedition arrived in the area that includes Pikes Peak State Park near the Iowa town of McGregor. It would be almost 150 years after Marquette and Joliet sailed along Iowa's eastern border before white settlers began moving inland to farm Iowa's incredibly rich topsoil. In the meantime, trappers and traders began exploring the rivers that fed into the mighty Mississippi. The French established some trading posts that would grow into Midwestern cities, including St. Paul, Minnesota, Prairie du Chien, Wisconsin, and St. Louis, Missouri. In the 1780s, a young Frenchman named Julien Dubuque learned that there were rich deposits of lead ore on the west side of the Mississippi River near Prairie du Chien. Lead was valuable because it was used to make ammunition for guns and cannons. Dubuque lived among the Native Americans in the area and mined the ore. Dubuque set up lead mines near the location of the city that bears his name and lived in the area until he died in 1810. And that was an excerpt from A Culinary History of Iowa by Darcy Doherty, Malsey, and other offbeat stuff by Eric Jones, Dan Coffey, and Barrett Thorkelson.